Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to amazon.com/prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Hey everyone, it's Devin.
And it's Freddie.
And this week in America, it's Turkey Week.
Yep, it's Turkey Week. And it's kind of a holiday vibe. So we are actually going to play a rerun, one of our favorite episodes, which was our first episode, which is How the Fuck Do You Buy a House?
How the Fuck Do You Buy a House of 2022? And in this episode, Fred and Chantel are going to walk us through the process that they went through only years, a couple years apart from each other. So give it a listen, learn something, and then like and subscribe.
Happy house buying.
Happy holidays.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Here.
Oh my gosh.
It's happening.
I've missed you ladies.
Oh, you too, gals.
I know. This podcast is going to be a bunch of us or a lot of us just catching up and then getting rich. Oh,
yeah. My two favorite things. Talking and, you know, making it rain.
Yep. Cheese, money, money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this is our podcast, our new podcast, and it's called Money Honeys.
Hey.
As we do more and more episodes, you guys are going to learn more and more about why we decided to create this podcast. I think, you know, a lot of these financial wellness podcasts that exist out here, they kind of have one point of view, you know what I mean? And I think what we could bring to a conversation, an ongoing conversation about finances, is our various backgrounds and our various financial knowledge and just how to navigate, you know, really getting the most out of life financially without driving ourselves crazy.
Mm-hmm. I think like we've had to learn a lot of this stuff from just like dry articles or from experiences that we have to fumble through and just from people that don't really like resonate with us. And so we want to continue that learning and then pass on what we've learned to you all in a less dry, more fun way.
And I think we've learned in the past 2 years that all of these social safety nets that are out here for women are kind of a scam. They are a little bit of a scam, or they're just stuck up in Congress. So I think what we need to do now as a collective is just get together, gab it out, and figure out what's really important to us so we can disseminate this information for all. Because a lot of this financial talk, I feel like, has, for lack of a better term, been gatekept. Mm-hmm. Gatekept.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Gatekept?
Yeah.
Kept.
Keepered? Keepered behind a gate. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of gatekeepers. So. Yeah.
So anyway, we're Money Honeys.
Yes.
Yes. And if you are unfamiliar with us, we are formerly members of the Collective Ladylike at BuzzFeed. Mm-hmm. You know, think circa 2017, 2018, maybe parts of 2019. That was our heyday.
Kylie Jenner lip kit.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
It's just, the vibes are still here, y'all. The vibes are still here.
It's the era of the Kylie Jenner lip kit, the protect your introverted friends on the internet. Mm-hmm. It's
learn what a contour is.
Yes.
Big baking.
Uh-huh.
Huge. Mm-hmm. We've all since graduated from that era.
True.
I mean, Freddie, you've left BuzzFeed.
I am, you know, a full-time freelancer right now, which is, and I have been for the past almost 2 years at this point, which is crazy. I started the freelance life as right before the pandemic hit. So that was an interesting shift to say the least.
An interesting heart attack.
Yes.
Cute. Nice. It was a cute one.
Yes.
It was really cute.
It was really cute.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of doing my thing, content creating. Like, I really want to make my way into more linear content, traditional Hollywood space. So I'm just trying to make it work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be happy and also make money.
Shmoney. Well, you should know that I'm producing a show right now. I'm not going to talk about what show it is, but your name came up a couple times. So you may be freelancing. It may be feeling like the free part of freelancing at this point, but I promise you are talked about.
Oh my gosh.
Yep, in some circles. So.
Well, wow. And that is what encouragement and friendship looks like, ladies and mm-hmm. gentlemen, because I had no idea. So thank you for that.
And Shanti, you are doing big things too, right?
Yes.
So I left BuzzFeed in October of 2019, also just a little bit, couple of months before the old pandemic. But I've been doing a lot of branded directing. And so mix of creative producing, mix of directing, all that stuff. Making a short, just doing more of that this year. And then eventually getting into the linear space as well as Miss FK Ransom also talked about. So yeah, we're making our way.
You're holding down that freelance lifestyle as well.
Holding down that freelance lifestyle. I love it.
Wait, before we move on though, Devin, I still want to hear more about what you've had going on the past couple of years.
I mean, I left BuzzFeed a month after Baby Chantel in November 2019. Swiftly lost my job. I moved to NBC, lost my job in June, and then again switched to the freelance lifestyle, which I have to point out, I don't know if there's a financial podcast out there hosted by three people who are freelance. I feel like when we talk about budgeting, when we talk about finances, it's always done from the perspective of people who have full-time jobs and are salaried. But you know, budgeting and weighing out like when you can spend money, when you can't, is just a different beast when you're freelance. So
it is a beast.
Yeah. Even when it gets down to the nitty gritty details, like, you know, net 30, net 45, net 60 of when you get paid from a project, like that kind of stuff is really impactful to, you know, a freelancer's life and how they're able to move.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But yeah, I've been out here producing, directing a couple shows for Facebook, Instagram.
Come on, producer and director, a couple shows.
I did a feature film, two feature films, actually, for a new platform that's coming out this year, which is exciting. You know, I really want, when I left BuzzFeed, I was like, I just want to, like, you know, wet my feet, cut my teeth. I want to do one of those things as much as I can. And it's been busy. It's been busy. I feel like also when the pandemic started and the stress of everything started setting in, I was like, I know what I can do. Work a lot. Wow. And pandemic's not yet touch me. Anyway.
Well, you also started a business.
I did start a business. It's called Butt Better Productions.
I love that.
Because we're just trying to be butt better.
Yes.
Anything. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll have merch. Everyone wants me to have merch for Butt Better. Maybe one day. Maybe one day that'll be a side hustle.
I love that.
But y'all bought houses, and that's what we really want to talk about today, because I feel like buying a house in this economy and with this labor shortage and the great resignation and whatever it's called is just a nightmare. But you did it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I want to hear about.
Yeah. And we're here to talk about it.
I have a lot of questions for y'all because I'm the novice in this space. I have not purchased a home. Chantel, you've been around this block before twice. Twice, which is crazy to me. And then you just bought a home.
I did. So, yes, I'm on home number one. Chantel's on home number two. Chantel's actually helped me a lot with my home buying process and just giving me advice and tips along the way. So I definitely, you know, would consider her really an expert at this point. There's always more to learn, and that's sort of the point of this podcast as well. But I definitely value the information that you've shared with me along the way. So I really am excited to sort of tag team with you and share this info with Dev and the rest of our audience.
Well, thank you, gals. I don't consider myself an expert, but I don't know. I mean, you just accumulate knowledge along the way, especially if you do it once yourself, and then you so. I bought a place in 2016. Then my partner bought a place this year. And so helped her along. I helped her a lot along the way. And then now other friends of mine are also taking the leap and buying homes. And so I've just been able to keep learning and keep dispelling that information as time has gone on.
For anyone who's like new to this space, just jumping right in, what other than having a home and living in it and choosing one and that's perfect and it's cute and it's a fun process, whatnot, what are the like generational wealth benefits that come from having a home? Why is it so important? For anyone who's just kind of tuning into this process, maybe just starting to think about it, or for someone who maybe didn't grow up in a house, maybe, you know, has lived in an apartment or has rented their entire lives, what are the financial benefits from having property?
So here's just one small little example. So say I buy a place today for whatever, $500,000. And then if I don't move out of that place, I have kids, I die, I pass that on to my kids. By the time that happens, that house, say it'll be worth $1 million, keep the number simple. So if I bought it for five, sold it for $1 million, or if I bought it for five and it's worth $1 million by the time I die and pass it on to my children, by then the house is paid off. So then if they sell that house, they're making $1 million because the mortgage is done. It's paid off. And so then me dying and passing on that house is as if I'm giving them an inheritance, something that usually only very rich people have. I'm giving them an inheritance of $1 million because I bought that home for $500,000 way back when. And so it can accumulate really quickly. Or even if I don't raise my kids and die in that house, but if I keep that house, sell it, and then get into something larger, you can see how quickly your wealth can accumulate. So even if you just like, basically, if you just make $100,000 or $200,000 on each house, you can see how that puts you up into these higher brackets the more you go.
You're making your money.
You're making your money.
Work for you.
Exactly. Wow. Exactly. Because there's always money that you can invest into a home. You've done a lot of upgrades. They're beautiful. So you can do upgrades. You can do whatever. Or you can do nothing. And in a market specifically like Los Angeles, that value is going to keep going up. You can buy $1 million house in Silver Lake. That's a teardown.
Yeah.
You know?
Oof. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we always joke around about, and even the internet in general jokes around about going on Zillow or Redfin and seeing these, like, you know, literal, I mean, just, it's just
trash.
It's barely a foundation. Maybe four walls.
No, yeah.
Maybe four walls. And it's, you know, $600,000-$800,000 in the LA area. And it is, it's real, it's true, and there are so many people who have accumulated all of this wealth who will buy that house and flip it and make more and
or
more
companies,
money.
Right?
Yeah, or companies.
My favorite thing about looking at those houses on Redfin or Zillow is there's always a washer machine somewhere in the house. Like, it may not have windows or steps, but oh, there it is. There's the washer machine. You know?
It might be in the backyard.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Might be on the patio,
the bathroom,
but it's there.
But it's there. There's a washer dryer in unit.
In unit. It's yours. Come and get it.
Yeah. A possum might be living in it, but it's ours.
But yeah, so it's really easy to see how real estate is a great way to honestly make money.
Ugh, I love that. So because I'm in the dark about a lot of these things and was coming into this, you know, I felt like I needed to fill out the experience of home buying so I kind of understand the layout with some context. So I wanted to start the segment out with a little rapid fire facts.
Pew, 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 pew.
That's right. That's right. So we can kind of see where we are in the general landscape. And then we're going to talk about the emotional, the personal, and what your experience, right? Because...
yeah.
Y'all are the experts in this episode. So, rapid fire fact number one, which generation do y'all think makes up most of the U.S. population in 2021? We got A, baby boomers, B, Generation X. I don't actually know what generation that is.
Not them.
C, millennials, or D, Gen Z. Which population do you think takes up the most space
in 2021.
When you mean most space, do you mean just like the highest percentage of the population?
Yes, yes. Then the majority of the population. I could have phrased that better, but I didn't.
Something leads me to say millennials or Gen Z, but I'm wondering if it's because that's my ecosystem. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I think millennials, because boomers were the biggest generation, the baby boomers, and then the boomers all had us, and we're mainly millennials.
You're correct. And that fact actually surprised me because I thought it was going to be boomers. I really thought it was going to be the boomers.
Mm, it's because they procreated and they made an even larger segment of the population, which is us. But everyone hates us. Boomers hate us even though they created us. And then Gen Z hates us because I guess we're just easy to hate. I don't know. we got none of the fun part of like being able to like, we got okay boomer and that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. And then boomers revolted and were like, you're not allowed to say it in the workplace.
Okay, boomer.
Okay, boomer.
That's fair. I kind of hate us, too. It's fine. At what age are millennials buying houses? 30, 33, 35, or 38?
This is over the U.S.
In 2021, the average of the first-time home buyer.
Okay. I'm going to say 30.
30?
I have no idea. Because like LA is very different than like Phoenix.
I'm thinking about like more so like middle America.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like, you know, homes in general are just more affordable. So I think you would be able to buy younger.
Agree. Okay. I'm going to say 30 as well.
33.
Oh.
Oh. Okay.
33. Does that make you feel behind or?
It makes me feel less behind.
Mm.
Yeah.
Same.
Chantel's been ahead. How old were you when you bought your first home?
I was 26.
Yeah.
Switching gears from generation divides to racial divides, which racial...
Hey there. Ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah. Or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Hey everyone, it's Justin Biggs here from the Biggs vs. Biggs podcast. If you're a fan of sports podcasts, then be sure to check out and subscribe to Biggs vs. Biggs, a show that covers upcoming fights, fight reviews, and interviews with some of boxing's brightest stars. And it's brought to you exclusively by Revolt Podcast Network, anchored in hip-hop, powered by creators.
The demographic has actually seen a rise in millennials being homeowners compared to their older counterparts. White folks, Latino folks, Asian folks, or Black folks?
Black and Latino folks probably make up the lowest percentage of the population who are homeowners.
Yeah.
Shout out to us.
Yes. It might be Asian.
That's what
folks.
I'm thinking too. We keep saying the same answers, yeah. Ben.
I think Asian.
We think C.
It's actually Latino.
Hey, I love that.
I wonder if part of it is just because Latino people have become a larger share of the population.
Yeah. While this population is on the rise, mm-hmm. right, of millennials and that racial demographic buying house, it's mm-hmm. still significantly lower mm-hmm. than everyone else.
Yeah.
So, yay! But also, like, we got work to do. Let's go to our little break.
Let's do it.
We did some deep breathing over mm-hmm. the break. Now we're just reconnected into the topic du jour, which, again, is home buying. And once again, I know nothing about home buying except Redfin is fun.
Love Redfin.
It's
my favorite home buying app.
I mean, it's my favorite app on my phone, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a serotonin boost. And then I remember that I can't, I don't think I can afford. Okay.
Maybe you could. Maybe you could, Dev.
So this is where we're just going to hop in right here. Because basically this is going to be an interrogation where I ask y'all all of my questions because I am in a place, you know, to where in 2022, I just turned 33. Patrick and I probably want to buy a house first together and then go from there, if you know what I mean.
Hell yeah.
So this is the year where I feel like I want to make the moves in this direction, but I want to hear from y'all about where you were mentally and emotionally before deciding to take the plunge.
For me, I always knew that I wanted to get into a place as soon as I could. So I was very much looking at condos because I knew that I couldn't afford a single family home at that time. And so basically out of college, I was just kind of trying to save as much money as I could because I knew.
But why? Like, why did you want to get into a home ASAP? Like, what was there something in particular that drove you to that desire?
Yeah, because I feel like that goes against the grain for like what millennials usually do, where they get out of college and they want to pay off their student loans immediately. Mm-hmm. What about you? What made you focus in on real estate so quickly?
So part of it is that for my college, I was able to get a shit ton of grants and scholarships. And so my loans were almost nothing.
Ugh.
It was like,
I just got chills.
I don't know if it was like $5,000 or $10,000 or something.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And so that, it's crazy how much of a leg up that can give you, which is dumb because my partner who makes more money than I do still has so like tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars in loans. But I don't. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge, huge part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize I'm very lucky for that. The other part of it is that I'm from LA. And so because of the industry that I knew I wanted to get in, I knew I had to stay in LA.
Mm.
And so it didn't sit right with me to be like, I knew that out of college, like I couldn't go back and like move in with my parents again, you know, just emotionally and whatever. And so it didn't sit right with me to be like renting a place in the city that I'm from. Mm-hmm. But then also when like my parents are like 20 minutes or 10 minutes away or something, like it just felt weird, you know. I was like, I need to like buy something. And yeah. So then the other part of it is I didn't move back in with my parents, but I moved back in with my grandma. And so I stayed with my grandma basically until I had enough money to buy the first place that I did.
So switching gears, you were in a different time of your life, Fred.
Yes.
You were a little bit older.
Yes.
When you wanted to buy your first property.
Yes.
And did you have student loans from Howard?
Yes.
Okay.
All yeses.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Two different millennial experiences. Here we go.
Post-college, I did a lot of, you know, being in the entertainment industry, especially just starting out, you make pennies. I think most of us know that. I moved to New York City making pennies and worked there for 2 years. And somehow was able to make it work. And like, I look back and I'm like, how did I?
Oh, yeah.
It's because we got bougie. Yeah, we got older. Yeah. We got bougie.
That's so true. That's
our backs started hurting.
Yeah. Literally.
We need good pillows.
Literally.
Or that's exactly what it is.
We got old and bougie.
And then I ended up moving to LA and I got an internship at BuzzFeed. So again, that was also an hourly rate. Maybe $12 an hour, $15 maybe.
When we started,
I can't remember, when you started,
it was $10 an
hour. When I started, it was $10.
Yeah.
And then the class after me, I think, got bumped up to 12. Like 12 or 15.
Crazy.
Yeah. And so I did not grow up knowing too much about like how to make your money work for you.
Mm-hmm.
I just know, and it's similar to Chantel, just save. Mm-hmm. Don't spend your money at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's like all I ever really went by was just like save, save, save.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is kind of what I did once I started working. You know, I got full time at BuzzFeed. I started really like getting super serious about just making sure that I was saving something. And I don't have a lot of. I love to shop, you guys. Like I love to shop. Mm-hmm. I love clothes. I love to travel. I love all these things. And I was like, okay, I need to just make sure that I'm just like having when my paychecks come on the 1st and the 15th, I think my first step was to take $250 out each paycheck and just had them automatically take it out so I don't see it on the 1st and the 15th. And that helped me a lot.
Yeah, then you're seeing $500 a month.
Yeah.
And bad.
Yeah, it definitely, and it's actually, I never took it off, so it's still happening. And I'm like, well, wait, hold on, y'all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not W-2 anymore. but it's actually, it does still help. Like, it really does still help.
2021, what was it about that year that you were like, bet, let's do it?
It was 2020 where I first was like, okay, I'm going to look for a real estate agent and see if I can start making actual moves towards home ownership. And I think it was because I had been sitting in my apartment all of 2020, not doing anything, not going anywhere. And I was like, I've got something. What is happening? I was like, my money is just being poured out every month to this man for rent for this apartment. I'm just sitting in here. Like, I don't have any real outdoor space. Like, what is happening? And so when I went into asking about loans and seeing what I could get approved for at that time, because I had just become freelance, like right at the end of 2019, they wanted more proof that I'd be able to pay my mortgage. I had just a few months of income to show them as a freelancer that I could pay, but they were like, you need at least 2 years. And I was heartbroken. Like, I was heartbroken. I was like, but wait, I have savings. Like, this is, look at how much I have in reserves. Like, I'm fine. They needed more proof. So I was like, very upset, because I had gotten, it had taken me a while to even get to the point of like being ready, and then to be kind of shut down in that way was like
traumatic.
Gosh, well, I just can't do anything. Like, I'm just going to be in this apartment, I guess, and this pandemic's never going away, and I'm just going to die in here. Like, that's just how I felt.
Depressing.
Like, I was actually very upset, and I was like, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing in my brain, right? The quote unquote, the right thing. You know, I'm trying to like make whatever moves that I can with my finances that I feel comfortable with and that I'm able to do in my brain, and like everything else seems to be stopping me from doing that. Fast forward. So my real estate agent, she was telling me, she was like, okay, we'll circle back. She was like, we'll circle back at the top of the year. It doesn't have to be 2 years, but let's see what happens with a full year of freelance, and we'll revisit, you know, getting approved. And so she was very like, she was like, fine, it's fine. Like, I'm not going anywhere. She's like, I'm not going to like disappear. She's like, we're going to work towards this. You're going to be okay. And then like when tax time came around, in 2021, I was able to submit my tax information, all my finances from the year of 2020. And I ended up looping in like my loan brokers into like my whole tax email thread with my accountant, and just so that he could see where I was. I did not realize he was going to pre-approve me right then and there. Like, I thought that I had like another year or so to go, but he was like, no, you're good to go. Like, let's get going. And I was like, I had like stopped going on Redfin. I had stopped going on Zillow. Like, I just had put it on the back burner and was like, I guess I just got to wait. And then he was like, you're ready. And then I was like, okay, if I'm ready, then I'm going to strike while the iron's hot and just try to get it done. So that was my like really long drawn out story of like how it happened. But it was very emotional, very upsetting at a lot of points, and then just like shocking, and then like a whirlwind, and then hunting, and like it was all of these things at once. So
you kind of made it sound like dating a little bit. A little bit.
Yeah.
You deleted all the apps.
Yeah.
And then re-downloaded them. Because part of it, is that whoever your lender is, they're about to loan you multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's going to be like the biggest loan of your life. And so what they're looking at is to make sure that you're good for it, that you have the means to pay it back. So if it's like, Devin, I'm going to loan you $1 million today, I need to know that now through 30 years from now, you can pay back that $1 million.
But realistically, with 1 year, maybe 9 months from when y'all were talking, 9 months of income, they're like, yeah, that's good.
That part is weird.
It's weird.
Because typically, I think you have to show like 3 years of income. I think like typically. It might just depend on the loan size.
Yeah. And I think, well, for me too, I was also talking to various lenders at the beginning, and they were all telling me sort of the same thing. And then my real estate, I think, you know, my biggest advice, if you can make it happen, is to find a real estate agent who has like a really good rapport and almost a team of brokers that they work with. Because that's really what it was. It was like a little dream team of like my real estate agent and my two loan brokers who like helped me get across this finish line. And they really specialize in helping single, freelance, you know, really women get this done. And they really make your profile look great. And like, that's their goal. And it's two white dudes. And then my real estate agent, who's a black woman. Like, it's
God
just,
bless. It's amazing.
You know what I mean? So it's, and that's, And she was like, they specialize in this and making sure that like people like you who aren't married or who don't have like a double income or who aren't W-2 can also make their home buying dreams come true. So that was.
Well, you brought me into the next question, which is like, how did y'all settle on a price range for your home? Because like, did you have a professional come in and look at all of your monies and was like,
that's your lender. That's so you're getting pre-approved for that's basically your budget. Like that it, you're getting pre-approved at the highest amount that they'll let you buy a house for. So you could come in under that, keep some of your monies. But if they're like, you're approved for 500, then you can really only buy something that's max 500.
And that loan is for the down payment mostly.
No. The loan is for everything besides a down payment.
Mm-hmm. Down okay, payment now comes we gotta back from... up. Okay, all right. So, okay, yeah. Talk me through it.
Yeah. So down payment comes from you.
Your savings.
Be it a gift. If I'm like, Fred, I'm going to give you $5,000 and great. Still has to come out of Freddie's account. Mm-hmm. So down payment comes from you. That's basically being like, all right, this is it's kind of like your collateral. Mm-hmm. And so you're putting in your down payment.
Okay.
Traditionally, quote unquote, gold standard is 20%. The reality is that's kind of a myth.
Right.
And so I put down 20% for mine. Freddie put down 10% for hers. Mm-hmm. And so being the largest barrier to entry for buying a home is saving all your pennies for your down payment. Mm-hmm. And so the down payment is just a percentage of what the house is, of what the house costs. And so, but there's a lot of different loans that you can get where you can qualify even though you put down less than 20%. Because saving 20% of a full sale price in a place like LA, that's a lot of money. It can be hundreds of thousands of dollars or even $80,000. It's a lot of money. And so saving up half of that, saving up 10%, there's loans where you can save up 5%, loans where you could save like 3.5%, 2.5%. And so
and the point of those loans is that you don't get punished or you don't get you don't have like severe consequences with like interest, right? Mm-hmm. If you're putting down, you know, 3% or 5% or 10%. Mm-hmm. Like they help you just sort of balance out so that you're not essentially like punished for not putting down 20%
up front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So the only thing about not putting down 20% is that typically you have a PMI, mortgage insurance, that you have to pay on top of it.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to roll my eyes.
Look, these are not my rules. You can roll your eyes all you want.
So backing up, that loan you get is to buy the home up front.
Yes. It's to buy the rest of the house.
The rest of the house.
Say you're buying my home.
Okay.
Say the down payment, we'll keep numbers easy. Down payment is $20,000. Full purchase price is $100,000.
Okay.
So that $20,000 that you give me gets wired to me. Seller, I'm happy I have $20,000. But then I'm like, hey, the full purchase price is $100,000. Where's my $80,000? I can't wait 30 years to get the rest of that $80,000 from you because I'm selling my home now. So your lender is essentially giving me my $80,000 and then you're paying the lender.
And how much on average are these home loan interest rates? How are we talking about?
Right now they're low. Right now they're super low. Yeah. So it's really, really good.
I'm looking it up for us, y'all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it depends on your lender. It depends on how you look as a buyer.
I was approved for, I believe, maybe $560,000 home.
Okay.
I already had in my mind that like $500,000 was going to be my cap because, again, with the home buying, you can get outbid. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like I'm going to just look for $500,000 because who knows? I may end up there at $560,000 by the time this is done while I'm competing with other buyers. Right. You know what I mean? So in general, I always go with the lowest possible. Like I'm like, what is the cheapest house I can find in a sale?
You're like me. When we walk into a store, we go to the sales section first.
Straight to the sales section. Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Why am I going to pay extra money if I don't have to?
Right.
Why?
I like this shirt. It's on sale. The sale is it influencing why I like it? Maybe. By the way, it's 3.8% for a 30-year fixed loan. For 15, it's 2.8. And I don't know what 10/6 ARP or ARM is.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. We're serious about this stuff. Okay. So you got approved for 500, 560.
Yeah.
And you got approved. Do you remember for what your condo?
I don't remember.
This was years ago, though.
Yeah. I don't remember what my like approval letter was for, but my condo was 350-50. And I knew that I was going to have a roommate immediately. My best friend from college. Shout out to Julie. But so that also was a factor into like my mortgage and stuff, because I knew that we'd essentially be splitting it.
Okay. So you get the loan.
Mm-hmm.
You get approved. You get pre-approved for a loan.
Which a lot of times.
Okay. Pre-approved or approved? Like, what are we talking? What's going on here?
Pre-approved is basically so a lot of homes require you to have a pre-approval letter before you even go in to see them, especially during pandemic, because they don't want to be exposing they don't want to be exposing themselves to people who actually can't afford these homes, because we're all trying to minimize our exposure.
Sure.
And so they need to know that the person who's coming in to tour that home can actually buy that home.
Because
there's
serious.
A lot of looky-loos.
Yeah.
A lot of looky. I was a looky-loo for like 2 years.
That actually happened to Pat and I. We went to an open house and they were like, no.
Yeah.
They were like, we smell a scam off of you guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah. So nowadays, in regards to the Los Angeles market, you need a pre-approval letter to view a lot of homes.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So the pre-approval letter is just like, hey, we think we may go on a date with you. It may cost $560,000. We are thinking about it. And then the approval is them actually putting the money down. Yes?
Mm-hmm. That all happens in escrow.
Okay.
So basically, the order is you decide you want to buy a home. You get pre-approved. And then you go and start touring homes. You find a home you like. You put an offer on that home. Offer gets accepted. You enter into escrow. Escrow is basically when all the contracts and all the money is exchanged. Then you close escrow. They give you your keys and it's your house.
Okay, well, I just got really excited. But coming back to like, you just got pre-approved for your loan. Where were y'all emotionally at this point?
I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, I was like, I was shocked. I was excited. I was like, okay, I'm re-downloading the apps. Like, I reached out to my realtor and I was like, let's go. She was like, yeah. Well, she was like, if you're ready, she was like, I'll have you something by the end of the year. This was in June.
And then, realistically, when did you move?
September 1st.
Wow. So just summer.
Just the summer, which is very, I think, rare a lot. I think it's having that quick of a home search to actually moving in Los Angeles in this market, I can't say anything, but, you know, it was just the stars aligning for me, because I fully expected to maybe even be looking into 2022.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they did their thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're talking about the fun part, which I'm excited about, the shopping part.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yes.
The other part, as you can tell, the other parts I don't know anything about. I'm like, what?
Yeah. So the shopping.
Did it feel like making a deal with the devil a little bit?
There's always a point during escrow where you think, this is the worst decision of my life and I should pull out immediately.
Seriously.
Did you have that?
Oh, yeah.
Multiple times?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. It just gets hard. It just gets hard because in escrow, that's also when you're doing your home inspections. It's when they're like writing up everything, and you just have to keep signing stuff like, yes, I will purchase this house and be liable for everything that ever happens to this house again.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like, yes, I you're wiring your down payment. You're just seeing it go. And most of the time in the contracts, there's not really any way to get that full amount back. You can have different like contingencies where it's like, okay, if you do your inspection, decide you don't want the house, then we'll give you like a percentage of your down payment back. But, you know, that's why houses falling out of escrow, it's when all that stuff is happening.
I had to put down 3% of the 10% that I was putting down at the very beginning of escrow, just to like hold the house.
Just mm-hmm. to have the conversation.
Yeah.
You're like, here's 3%.
Yeah. It's like, and that's significant. I think for me, I think I had to give them $13,000.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. No, that's
at the
nothing.
Beginning.
We're talking small percentages, but big dollars.
Yeah. And so I was like, wow, this is, This is a lot. It was a lot of money. And so I was like, let's just hope the inspection goes well, because that's also like Chantel was saying, that's when a lot of people do fall out, because you can find out that the foundation is going to cost $60,000 to repair. And it's like, is it worth it if I'm
right?
You know what I mean? It's like, I might as well go look for a different house, because now mm-hmm. I'm spending $60,000 more than what I was planning on.
Well, that's mm-hmm. actually ties us into a listener question, which we have those now.
Hey.
We opened up our social media accounts asking for any questions a person may have. Mm-hmm. And someone asked, what do you do if the owner lied about plumbing damage and you bought the house?
So basically, you need to have a good inspector so that you don't buy the house and find this stuff out later, because a good inspector will find that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So in like hire an inspector that's legit a third party.
I'm thinking about Dwight Schrute in that episode.
Basically, in the parties. It's like, it would Dwight Schrute find it? If the answer is yes, then your inspector should find it. So it's like, you know, like, don't go through someone that your realtor is like, oh, you know, you can take recommendations, whatever. But it's like, don't go through someone that like the seller recommends. Don't go to someone that like truly anyone recommends unless you feel 100% comfortable with them. Definitely don't get one that your seller recommends.
Yeah.
So we got one who is just legitimate third party. And so in the inspection, it depends on the housing market. If they find, hey, this plumbing is shot to hell, then it comes back to you to say, okay, I don't care and I want to buy this house. Or you can go back to the seller and say, hey, this is going to cost $60,000. You take $60,000 off of the sale price. Or you fix this before I buy it, which is like never going to happen. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, because they don't have an incentive to fix it for
right,
you.
Right.
But it's like, okay, you take 60K off and then we can keep proceeding.
So what happens if like when Freddie put down that 3%
mm-hmm.
and we find that the plumbing is shot
mm-hmm.
and then if you want to back out, do you get that 3% back or no?
Yes, because it was written in my offer.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. So
you want to make sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So your offer also just needs to be rocks. You just really need
tight.
Good people.
Yeah, it has to be really tight.
You need good people.
There's so many things that you, if you've never done it before, there's so many things you would never think to
yes.
put in there, which is why you should really have an agent who's like you is trusted and has experience, and like you know that they like are crossing all their T's and dotting all their I's. Because that was my main thing. I was like, now this $13,000
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
I am putting mm-hmm. in here.
She's going to come back if this doesn't work out,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. She's going to return to mama.
Yeah. To carry us through escrow, it's basically you get your inspection, you sign all your contracts, they sign all their contracts, you wire the money over, and then your lender wires the money over to the escrow account. Once it hits that account, then they're like, all right, that's the last step. We have all the money. We have all the signatures. We can close escrow and get you your keys today, tomorrow. Once it's all there, they're like, great, when do you want your keys?
I just feel like y'all have educated me so much, which, by the way, thank you so much. That was wonderful. I got all my questions answered, but I just want to turn one more time to our fans. Because here's a good question that I think might divide us. What do you think is better? To have low debt or more savings when you apply for a mortgage?
You're always going to have debt. Basically, like, you like student loan is debt. Even once you own a home,
life is debt.
That's debt.
Breathing is debt. Mm-hmm. You owe that breath back to society.
You beach. So it's more about the equation of it all. So you can have debt as long as what you make is more than that debt so that you can pay your mortgage and pay all your bills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's just an equation. Because if you have $100,000 in debt, but you make $2 million a year, yeah, you're going to get approved for a loan. But if you have $100,000 in debt and you make
$150,000,
yeah, then it's going to be a little harder.
So figure out your equation. Copy. Mm-hmm. Got it. So as two single gals who bought homes as, you know, on a single income, mm-hmm. what is the number one tip you give to somebody when it comes to like auditioning people for your team that you were mentioning?
Something that was important to me was just being able to vibe well with my real estate agent. I started with that because to me that felt like the main source of like where I would get my home from, right? I was like, I feel like I'm going to be mostly in contact with this person. Like, this is going to be my ride or die, essentially, until we actually close something. So for me, I was like, I really want someone who understands sort of almost my emotional stance at that point. I wanted, because I was very emotional about it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. even just talking to her initially in our first conversation, I started tearing up because I just really wanted it so bad.
And, how'd she
and I just
that?
Wanted her to believe in me. She was so, I mean, so again, how I found my real estate agent actually was a recommendation, but she also went to Howard University. Mm. So she went to the same college as me, which is a historically Black college and university. And she's a woman living in LA. So, and she may be 35, 36. So also young and like had not so long ago bought her first home. So she very much was like in line with, I think, like my ideas and my morals and my values and just like my worries and concerns. And like, she is married and like has that other income, but it wasn't always the case. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So for me, it was just finding someone that aligned and understood my perspective.
Any other hot tips that proprietary knowledge that y'all want to give to our listeners about home buying, the process? A big yeah. question we get is about our credit score. I saw on our user submitted content.
Mm-hmm.
What tips do you have about your credit score? Are there any hot tips that we've missed in this process?
Yeah. So you definitely want a good credit score. And so you want to start building your credit. For example, the first credit card that I had, it was like a $300 limit. And so I would spend like $20 on it a month and then just pay it off every month. But that was still building my credit.
Mm-hmm.
And so you definitely want to have a good credit report, because again, it just goes back to like a loan. You have a good credit score if you're able to pay back your debts.
What are we talking
time.
Here? Like 680, 700, something for
yeah.
Free.
I would say 670 fine.
Yeah, I was thinking like upwards of 650.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
around that.
Research and learn the home buying process way before you're ready to buy a home. Always be, for me, it was always being on the apps so that I could see what houses are listed for and what they actually sell for, especially like in LA. Like, I would always
right.
heart them to be like, okay, this one is only listed at like 300. And then I would see it go for 400.
A million.
Or 450. And so like following it through there, which takes a couple months, but that way you know, okay, what are things listed for? Always look at the price per square foot.
Oh.
That's what I always look at on those apps.
Elaborate.
So you can have a house that's $1 million, say it's 1500 square feet, or you can have a house that's $1 million and say it's 800 square feet.
Right.
And so you want to know how much house you're buying and how much you're paying per square feet versus paying, like, I think mine at the time was maybe like 360 a square foot, which in LA is like so low now. But
right.
So it's like, oh, is it? It's pretty. I like it. But if you're paying $1,000 a square foot when comps in the area are going for like $700 a square foot, then you're kind of getting ripped off. If you at some point, if you have enough money and you don't care and you just want it, then you just get it.
Then go for it, girl.
Then you just go for it.
Yeah.
But that's what I look at. I do the filters based on like on sale price.
Changing my filter mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah, do it based on sales price. And then I always click the drop down to see what the price per square foot is. And always follow through to see how much things actually sell for.
Love that.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, gorgeous girls.
Gosh, that's great.
Look at the square footage yes. and how much it costs.
Yeah.
Fred, any last minute tips that you're thinking about?
I think a tip, a really random kind of tip, would be if you put an offer in for a house, contingencies are important. And I think that a lot of times the less contingencies you have, the more likely that your offer will get accepted. If you're at like a good rate in terms of what you're willing to pay, never get rid of the inspection contingency.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Because people do that just to get the house. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes a lot of times things can go south. So regardless, never get rid of your inspection contingency, because like you really want to make sure that this house is livable and in livable conditions. There's no mold and all these things that can, you know, essentially be really hazardous to your health and also just really expensive to fix.
Well, thank you all for so much for sharing your knowledge with us. And when we come back, we're going to ask a rich dude some things.
Today's rich dude hails from Los Angeles. He, of course, wishes to remain anonymous, so I'm going to call him Jonas. So, Jonas, I hear that you are very well versed on investments and the like. What is a tip that you offer to everyone?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me. I think because this is your first episode, I think I'll offer up one of the most basic but most important tips there is, which is that time in the market beats timing the market. That is to say, There's a lot of people who want to try and wait around, sit on the sidelines, and try and dive into investing for the first time at the perfect moment, right? A low point. And time and time again, we see that that kind of strategy is nearly impossible to get right. If you're thinking about getting started in investing, you're better off jumping in. You can average in, but time in the market is the single best indicator of investment success.
That is really good advice. And wow, I'm just already shook. Wow, money advice. Can't wait to utilize it.
It's hard because, you know, rich dude, whenever you, the first thing my first reaction to your advice is to roll my eyes. I don't know why. It has nothing against you. But I'm just going to be honest. My second reaction is, wow, that's a cute phrase. I love it. Can you explain what you mean by time in the market? Like, are you saying invest money and then just let it sit there and hold it there? Is that what you mean?
Absolutely. That is honestly, time and time and again, proven to be the very best strategy. And I get the hesitancy right now. I think everyone looks around and sees really overvalued stocks, and it's been quite a while since we've had a true market crash, and there's a lot of doomsayers saying it's coming again, and so I get the instinct to wait for the perfect moment, but honestly, if you had say 2 years ago looked at pending elections and changing regimes and this sort of thing and gone, you know what, I'm going to wait to see how this shakes out, you would have missed the last 2 years in the market, which has seen S&P gains of north of 20% in the last 2 years. So while you're waiting to time that dip and buy in low, you're missing out on major profits. And honestly, now that's gotten even worse because you have inflation skyrocketing. And so your money that's not invested is actually losing value every month.
Mm-hmm. I hate to hear that. Yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah. That kind of that stung a little bit because I do have, you know, all of my savings just sitting.
No,
just
Fred.
Sitting. I know.
Same. Fred. No. Same. No. I know.
It's one of those things where it's. I have to let go.
Yeah.
I have to let go and invest. I know I do. And I think that I'm one of the culprits who's like, it seems like not the right time. And I think also that's just projection from people just talking and just everyone saying it's not the right time. And that the same thing also goes with home buying, right? Mm-hmm. It's always not the best time to be buying a house, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also just more so based on like your personal situation, mm-hmm. how much money you have, how much you're willing to sort of let go in the moment, and then kind of just being okay with that, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you're trying to invest, Rich Dude tells us, just jump.
Jump in.
Just jump in. Doesn't mean you have to put all your money in all at once. Start a little bit.
Yeah.
Get used to it. Try it out.
That's actually an excellent point. I get the fear. And averaging in is a really great strategy for maybe lessening how scary it is. And also, again, trying not to time things. So if you're going to invest, if you got $1,000 to invest or $10,000, whatever it is, or even $100, start with 20%. And then in a week or so, invest another 20%. And that way you can ride out any of the volatility that's going on right now. Mm-hmm.
So I guess to be clear, what exactly do you mean by averaging in?
Yep. You're going to need to circle back to that because I'm numbers illiterate. Rich dude, help us out.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, You know, we're in a period where there's a lot of volatility, which means things are going up and down pretty quickly. And so as you're looking to jump in, you may think that the best idea is to just jump in with everything that you've had parked on the sidelines, right? Do one big buy and get it over with. But it can be a good strategy and less scary to take 20% of what you're going to invest and invest that in, and then wait a set number of times, say a week or a month or whatever you decide upon, and then invest another 20% no matter what has happened in the stock market. Mm. So maybe it'll go up and okay, you feel like I should have invested more earlier. That's where emotions start to get into play. So it's really important with a strategy like this to decide what your rules are going to be for yourself ahead of time, mm-hmm. and take the emotion out of it. Mm. But the good news is, say in a month, if things have gone down, well, now your average price that you're buying in at is going to be lower because that next 20% you've bought on a discount. And you can think of it that way, mm. right? Stocks aren't crashing. They're on a discount. They're on sale.
Wow.
Love that.
Wow. So much to digest, Rich Dude. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rich Dude.
Thank you, Rich Dude.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us on this inaugural episode of Money Honeys, where we, the honeys, are learning more about monies.
We're professional.
Yeah, sure. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, rate us, leave us a nice review. If you don't like what you hear, just stay offline. Don't create any more issues for us. Thank
you. You can just do a slow fade. You don't have to like.
We get it. Yeah. We're not everyone's cup of tea. But if you do like us, leave us a cute comment.
Yeah.
And thanks so much.
We'll see y'all next time.
Let's make some money, y'all.
Hey there. Ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah. Or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again, because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.